Welcome back to the Think Education Podcast, Judith Lammy and myself, Chris Hill, today with you, as always, for your platform for higher education, internationalization, ramblings. Bizarrely, we're going to try and talk about success today. Not of the podcast, not of, of our own relationship, which we've talked about in quite a bit of detail in previous conversations and indeed written about. But we've been thinking, I guess, for a while now, over the span of the two books that are already published and the third one that's sort of in the works, about journeys, right? We've been thinking about beginnings, we've been thinking about activity, we've been thinking about journeys, and we've started to come back to this idea of not how do you know when you've won, but how do you measure success, right? How do you articulate this? Because a lot of the conversations that you and I have had, Judith, both between the two of us and indeed with colleagues on the podcast and clearly colleagues in multiple meeting rooms around the world, when we're talking about T&E and we're talking about internationalization, a lot of it talks about motivation. It talks about, you know, what you do when you start and how do you pick a partner. And you've talked in great detail about your previous British Council trips and how the shift in focus and the shift in activity is really contributing to potentially successful activity, right? Because of all the sort of the pre-work. But this sort of notion of, you know, how do you demonstrate success and how do you convince senior management of success and how do you, you know, prove the concept? I don't know. I mean, I guess this is both a philosophical conversation, but particularly in light of what's happening in many countries in the world at the moment about mobility and about internationalization, this sort of notion of demonstrating value, success, I mean, however we want to word it, I mean, it's a very timely thing that should be quantifiable, and I guess is in some ways, but so I'm, yeah, so this is what we're going to try and tackle, right? We are not going to solve the problem, but we're going to have a go. We're going to have a go at chatting about it, right? So where are you, where's your thinking in this sort of space?
So I think it's a good question for us to cover today and to start, as we always do in these kind of conversations, off on a tangent.
Oh, yes.
I was having a chat to one of my colleagues, Professor Camilla Knight, a couple of days ago about the equality, diversity, inclusion and belonging agenda that we've got at the university. And we're putting together a strategic plan that needs to be published, and it's there now, and we've just been consulting on it and discussing it across the university. Obviously, one of the aspects then in the plan and the accompanying action plan for each of the outcomes and areas is our measures, are what success looks like. And we started to have a conversation then about how do we measure success within that context? And as you said, though, Chris, it then started me reflecting on, very often when we have these conversations, when we're looking at international, there's a whole spectrum of different measures, aren't there? From what you can quite easily quantify,
yep,
in terms of a number of this. So have you got an aim to have X number of students on this program coming from Y countries, yeah, and etc. That kind of, so from that up to, and again, this is what we were talking about when I was talking to Camilla about the sort of belonging agenda, up to things such as creating a climate and a culture of support and belonging. You know, the kind of things where, and therefore, you know, your outcome is that you have created this culture that supports individuals. I mean, and we were then thinking, how do we measure that? How do we know? Is it just a feeling you get? Yeah. Is it, you know, or is there, do you have to go around asking people, hey, how you doing? Do you feel like you belong? You know, and then get them to tick it off on a scale of 1 to 10. Or is it just something where you just get a general feeling that something might be the case, and you know, that you're embracing that sense of belonging in that sort of way. And it really was, so we, similarly to our conversation, didn't really come up with any conclusions, actually, except to possibly remove the word measure, because we couldn't necessarily think of actually, you know, quantifiably how we would justifiably say that we could measure some things. But and in not being able to do that, in not being able to measure things in the way in which sometimes we feel as though we should or we're expected to measure, if you don't do that with some things, it's almost like saying that they're not important, as important as the others where you can measure them. So rather than taking out those things, therefore, that we couldn't 100% have something quantifiable on, we just actually removed the word measure and put in different ways in which we would look at how we reflect on an outcome of success or an impact in different sorts of ways. And that, I suppose, is something, and I know we talked about this a little bit, I think probably even a couple of podcasts ago with Vicky Lewis, when we were talking about internationalization strategies and what we measure there and what does success look like. And if you think back to, you know, many years ago when we first had international strategies at universities, and it was all about recruitment, and it was about numbers, and it was about retention. And it wasn't even then actually about progression or about achievement. It was almost the students coming in measure.
Yeah.
And that was it. And that's matured and that's changed over the years. But still, I think if you look at a lot of strategies, you know, there is that focus on being able to measure, measure in numbers and not measure in some other way.
Yeah. It's funny because, you know, as you're explaining this, I mean, in many ways, like you, I've been social scientist my full academic career. And there's often been this, you know, whether it's perception or feeling that, you know, the hard sciences are the important ones. They're the measurable ones, right? They're the ones doing the, you know, the critical stuff. And then the social scientists come in and talk, not literally about people's feelings, but they talk about perceptions. They talk about very subjective things that you can't really prove, you know, and you can't really demonstrate. And you think, oh, does that mean it's of less value? And again, that's becomes a value judgment. But, you know, then leads, and we see those debates in schools when arts and humanities and music are removed from curricula. But, you know, it's an interesting thing that, you know, if you can measure something cleanly, well, then it must be important because you can measure it. And if you can't measure it, therefore, you know, and you by simply saying, well, let's just change the terminology, let's change the framework, or let's change the perspective of how we're actually viewing this this thing. Interestingly, I was having conversation this week as well with colleagues from a UK university, and they were talking about developing T&E strategies and developing ideas, and they were talking about, well, how do you incentivize this? Because, you know, it's something that it takes a lot of work, but isn't often recognized by the university. And, you know, if you have a partnership with an, you know, that's not ref returnable. So what value does that have within, in their case, the UK education landscape? You know, you've brought two students from country A, so one assumes there's value to those two students, right? Or impact in some degree. But other than that, well, you know, what was the point of that? Like, you didn't bring in £1 million. So what was the point? And therefore, why keep going? I guess as you take that logical argument, and it is a very difficult thing to. I mean, even when you and I have talked about our journeys in education or our visits, you know, a lot of how we measure that value is in very sort of reflective language, right? It's sort of decades on from when those experiences took place. So how do you then, what's your next step then? If you remove the word measures, what comes next?
So I suppose I guess you can't always completely remove the words measures, can you? Because you do need, in some way, to have some things that are quantifiable. I suppose it's, you know, going, it is looking at maybe measures, impact, outcomes, those sort of things that therefore don't have to be purely quantifiable. Or indeed, you know, they might be, but your starting place is at a different place. You know, if you're talking about, and then maybe languages is a good way of looking at this. I mean, I'm mindful of the discussions we've had over the last little while a few times about the importance of studying overseas, the importance of learning a language, you know. But if you still think of how we are measured in terms of success for our language at school or at university, you probably still get, there's probably still a lot there that focuses on accuracy,
mm-hmm.
on actually have you used the right tense when you're discussing this particular thing. Here's a passage, translate it into mm-hmm. X, you know, and then would you ever get 100% if you've made any errors whatsoever? Unlikely. In the whole scheme of things, if you are looking, however, at communicating and you've managed to communicate something and the communication itself has been 100% accurate, why shouldn't that be 100%? That, yeah. I think, in yeah. itself is... And that has always been the excuse I've used for always failing quite spectacularly in my French, certainly at school and since, you know, was that, well, I feel people can understand me. It doesn't really matter if I've used the wrong tense. They know where what I mean because we're here having a chat about it, yeah. you know. So I think it's sometimes that notion with some of the things that we think about and maybe language of this, that there seems to be more of an emphasis placed on accuracy and getting things correct than there is on actually what the outcome or the impact is, you know. So if the point is that you want to go into, well, people don't go to post office and buy stamps anymore, but if you are of a certain age and remember what stamps are, and indeed writing on paper with pens, then, you know, you might want to go into a post office and you might want to buy a box of stamps. And you might want... So it doesn't matter if you get the tense wrong, if you get the, you know, if you got... The point is you want to be able to come out with the stamps.
With the stamps, yeah.
Now, if you go into a fishmonger's and ask them for a box of stamps and you come out with a kilo of tuna, then probably... it could be safe to say that you have failed in that particular exercise. However, if you don't do that, if you do the other one, then surely that's success. So I guess it's, you measure success, I suppose, relative to what the reason was that you were measuring it in the first place. I understood that, Ed, but I'm not entirely sure it came out.
No, absolutely, because I think this is absolutely correct. And I think it goes back to what are the motivations for T&E. So what's the impetus for why are you doing this? And because primarily or historically that has been about recruitment, right? Which, and recruitment means numbers, which means money, which, and it's about, T&E was about access, you know, recruitment back to a home country masked by increasing access in another country. But the motivation factors weren't altruistic because there were obviously risk involved and they were expansion and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But, and I've seen this from having worked in a part of the world where many of the host countries are. So, you know, a lot of receiving of T&E. And in the early stages, that they're saying, we want T&E. Like, well, what do you mean by what type of T&E? Or do we just want T&E? As in, it's just understood as a thing. Mm-hmm. We want it because it's going to do this. Like, well, actually, you probably don't. You want something very specific that matches. And the sending country, well, we want to expand and we want to do this. And you think, well, those two things, there's nothing inherently evil about them. But if that's what your motivation is, your view of success is a quantifiable number of students in the classroom, fees in the account. And when the numbers don't match whatever your perceptions were, that's a failure. Right? So if we rephrase that to say, well, actually, we're about expanding this, or we're about demonstrating the impact of the internationalization, or we're trying to build partnerships, they are obviously a lot longer term, right? They're much more difficult, or much more inherently difficult to actually measure, because they're not immediate. And therefore, selling that as an idea is a lot harder, right? Because it's a much of a long-term goal. But I think maybe if we view that, it's like, well, if I can come out with stamps, then good for you. I mean, I remember having a conversation with one of my former PhD students, and she was looking at linguistics, and she was looking at a lot of the issues you've just been talking about. And she asked me once in class, and she said, "Well, what's your view on accuracy of language?" And I said, "Well, as an academic, it has to be accurate. Like, when you are writing an academic paper, the language has to be accurate, right? Academic language and regular language are not the same. Like, if you're using this format, there are rules, and you have to follow them, because without which it's not going to get published, or we won't understand, or you can't defend." And I said, "So as a purist from that perspective, I want it to be as correct as possible. But exactly as you just said, as somebody who travels and makes mistakes in languages all the time, if I'm prepared to make mistakes, why would I care if other people make them? Like, if I understand what they're trying to say and we can have a conversation, then it's just, that's communication. We're not looking for purity. We're looking for engagement, right? We're looking for learning something and moving through. And if we can try to capture that experience as an byproduct, I'm not sure what it would be. So I completely agree with you. Stamp analogy aside, I actually buy stamps quite regularly when I'm in Germany, because it's still a thing. And so I am completely shocked by how much more expensive they were than when I remember buying them when I was a lot younger. But that's true of everything. Then I still think polos cost 10p a packet, and that's not been true for, I don't know, 35 years or something. So, yeah.
Yes, don't get me started on how much a bag of chips costs now.
Yeah.
The cost. And so I suppose, in one way, which isn't rocket science, but is something that we don't always think about, is that it does all come back to what your goal is at the beginning, what you're trying to achieve, and therefore, you know, you need to set your measure or your outcome, you know, strongly aligned with what that goal is. Suppose a question, therefore, then, or a challenge when you're looking at partnership development or when you're looking at T&E, for example, is that often the, you know, you might have found, you know, the ideal partner, might have done all the research, done all the number crunching, got all the data analysis there, and you've both done it on both sides, and you've decided that, you know, that everything is there that will support a really burgeoning, successful partnership, however you might find it. But actually, then, when you come down to the goals or the reasons why you're entering into the partnership and what you want out of it, those might be different.
Yeah, yeah.
And how, therefore, can you go forward with that partnership, particularly if, and as you just said, though, when it comes to numbers, particularly if one of you is looking at the numbers in some way and those numbers don't stack up, then is one of you going to leave?
Yeah.
Is one of you going to walk away from that partnership? Or are you looking at the other person's goals and saying, actually, they're equally as important as mine. I'm noting what yours are. And actually, if we both do this and it's both successful, we'll both be happy.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think that's an interesting dilemma, isn't it, sometimes in this kind of partnership development space as well.
Absolutely, because it's not a static equation, right? It's both sides may begin with an initial expectation, but, you know, things change and things evolve and new opportunities and things fail or succeed. And as you say, it's not going to be completely binary. There has to be, which if it's purely quant and it's purely I've not hit my target, then I'm going to step away, as opposed to, well, actually, if we're thinking more about long-term engagement and we're thinking more about, you know, impact and thinking more about footprint and influence, et cetera, then yes, there is a different way of thinking about it. I mean, you've said often on several occasions that, you know, the ability to walk away is not in and of itself a sign of failure. You know, and actually, but therefore, conversely, staying may very well be counterproductive. Mm. So it's an interesting space, isn't it? That I think, particularly when you're dealing with distance and time and culture and regulatory bodies and, you know, all these different expectations and perceptions. To expect it to be foolproof, to expect it to be static, to expect, I mean, is kind of an act of lunacy, right?
Absolutely. And I think something else that comes into it, and you've mentioned the word there a couple of times, is also time. You know, very often too, certainly at universities, I don't think it matters which ones you're at, you know, there's the question of what does success look like? But usually you could add on to that question, what does success look like within this 12-month period?
Yeah.
Or within the next 8 months? Because you could say success within the next 5 years looks like this, and we can see that, you know, you've got to do, particularly with partnership development, you know, it starts slowly and it builds gradually, but then, you know, it starts to increase much more, you know, the more that the partnership develops, you know. But we don't always either have that luxury. I don't know whether it's have, or maybe it's that we don't always give ourselves that opportunity, you know, to take time to develop what we're doing, so that we're measuring success at different points in time. So I think sometimes as well, therefore, you know, we'll probably say, well, maybe we shouldn't pursue that relationship because in 12 months' time, we can't see what we're really, really going to get out of it. Mm. And the other side might say the same thing, and then you both walk away. Instead of going, all right, now we don't want always, therefore, then to go, it's not sort of Confucian. You don't want to go 50 years into the future, because most of us would at least quite like, with some of the things that we're doing, to be able to see some form of progress,
yeah,
at least, or some outcome. But at least you've got to not be with so many things confined or constrained by what might be universities, a business planning round, or a, you know, or a round that looks at things within that yearly time frame, which I think does therefore then make it a big challenge, because it goes back to what you were saying previously with some T&E, you know, opportunities. If you're looking at numbers, well, you might only get 2, 3, 4, 5, or 10 students on it. So people are going to say, what's the point in doing that then? And actually, that might still be a very, very valid point, depending on what your goal is.
Yeah, of course.
But if your goal is financial and you're looking at potentially a lot of outlay to begin with in terms of development costs and setup costs, then, you know, if you've got a short-term view of something, then you're never going to really see the kind of success potentially that you're looking for.
It's funny, I was just reflecting back on an experience that I had a lot working in Southeast Asia, and it's something that we wrote about in a previous book when we were creating that framework of engagement from low level to medium to high level, and sort of the different levels of activity and willingness. And I was remembering the sort of collection of MOUs that universities went through. And I was always struck by, well, this seems kind of pointless, right? You know, you've got a piece of paper, but quite literally nothing happens. But actually, if you reframe it, that's a massive success indicator, which grows every year. So if your view of success is, well, how many MOUs have you got this year? Oh, we've got 100. How many this year? You know, and actually, the success metric is we are now engaged with twice as many as we were last year. And it's just kind of that interesting way of thinking about, well, that is a success factor. You've made a connection. And if that's how you're measuring success, it quite literally is a box ticked, right? It's...
And I suppose actually on that note, because I've argued many, many times over the years that, you know, you actually negative numbers for MOUs can be more of a success than positive ones can. And I remember, and I know I've said this previously in a job interview that I had, which was decades ago now, where one of the questions actually from the Vice Chancellor was, you know, one of our aims is to set up 2 new strategic partnerships every year. How would you do that? And I said, well, I don't know. Maybe I'd close 2 partnerships, or we should close 2, because I don't know what you're doing with the ones that you've got at the moment, you know. So I think there is there's that aspect to it where you might therefore then say, does it really make any difference? However, and I was just thinking of this the other day when I was looking at the, you know, I know that league tables, I think we're going to have a discussion about this in the future as well. League tables always creates a response from people. Yeah. Sometimes very positive, depending on if it's your league table. Sometimes slightly less positive, depending on if you're, you know, in the league table and at the bottom of it. But if you think about the fact that very often with league tables, if you're looking at the feedback you give on academic reputation, the feedback you ask employers to give, they've got to know about you first.
Yeah.
They've got to know who you are in order to say whether they think you're any good at anything or not. So if in the development of MOUs, you're actually using that purely as a tool to get to know people, to share what you're doing.
Yeah.
You might not exchange any students, you might not, but you might have written some joint papers. You might not have even done that, but they might then know about you as either as individuals, as an institution, and then give positive feedback when it comes to one of the one of the higher education surveys. Then arguably that is a success. Now, how you could directly correlate that with a table and that particular MOU might be stretching the point somewhat, but it wouldn't hurt what you're doing.
No.
So that could be therefore something where you could say, you know, if we signed 1,000 MOUs this year, it means 1,000 institutions know who we are.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Discuss.
Yes. I can't believe this is now a thing in my head that for the last however many years I thought this was completely pointless, and now we've literally sowed the seed of, funny. So
we are not suggesting 1,000 MOUs, though, guys. So just to be really clear, just plucked a large out of the air.
I remember at one point I was asked by a university in Malaysia, could they come and visit the campus to talk about and learn about the establishment of the graduate school that we were doing. I said, of course, absolutely. You know, more than happy to make these connections. You know, I wasn't there long at that point. You know, I get to learn from other people and, you know, network, etc. And obviously it's a bit flattering to have people come and want to talk to you and see what you're doing. And so I'm like, yeah, absolutely. Great. And they said, oh, okay, good. Could you write us a formal letter of invitation? And I said, okay. I mean, I thought that's what had just been agreed by the email, but oh, okay. So I kind of write a formal, you know, and then it comes back. Can you actually put this on headed paper and get, you know, somebody more senior than you to sign it so that, you know, okay, our protocol office needs it. Oh, okay. So I go and do that and send it back. Would it be okay if I brought a few colleagues along because people are interested? Okay. I'm going to be bringing 19 people, so there'll be 20 of us total. I'm like, okay, I don't actually think I've got enough room for that, but sure. And then the email, could we have another 19 letters, formal letters of invitation for each of the individuals? And I said, okay. And I went to talk to one of my colleagues in the department, and she said, yeah, that's 20 KPIs. That's 20 individual things that they've ticked. 20 people showed up. They sat across the table from me. One person said, so graduate school then, how's it going? I was like, yeah, fine. I went, great, thanks. And then they basically left. Like, oh, wow. Okay, that was kind of backfired a little bit. But it was a very interesting lesson in perception, reality, and the game, right? Which is played differently in different countries, but it's still, you know, of critical importance, even if our perception of it is kind of skewed by our own background. But, you know, within the context, this was a critical thing. And you've managed to get 20 in one day. I mean, that's okay. You've got nothing that you can demonstrably show from it, unless the thing that you need to show from it is that 20 people made a connection. And then there you go. That's success. From my perspective, that was a bit of a waste of an afternoon.
In a way, therefore, then, going back in a slightly more positive note, going back to the MOUs, you know, it might be, therefore, in many countries, many institutions, that in order for them to even have any form of a conversation with you,
exactly,
they need to sign something.
They need to sign something, yeah.
You know, and therefore, for you as an institution, you know, you have to go through all of this, you know, get the legal team to look at it, and are you going to do this? And it goes backwards and forwards and backwards and forwards. And you have to remind people constantly, don't you, in your own institution, that all this paper, all this document is actually saying is that we can talk to each other.
Yeah.
That is all it is saying.
Yeah.
It isn't committing any resource, isn't committing any time, it isn't committing any other form of outcome, in that what we're saying is that you are allowed to talk to these people,
yeah,
here. And whereas we, probably in many of our institutions, and the people listening to this don't always need that, some people in other institutions do need that.
Yeah, exactly.
They need that piece of paper.
Yeah.
Because also they might want to visit at a certain point. They might want to themselves commit something more to it and something more tangible, but they need that to be something that will enable them to do that. So I suppose, yeah, so who would have thought that this podcast would come back to the importance of signing MOUs?
Yeah.
What I suppose that does go back to, and again, thinking to in terms of what success looks like, but it goes back to those goals, doesn't it? It goes back to the goals and the aims and why you're doing something.
Yes.
And therefore what you might need to do in order even to put yourself into the position of achieving or be. And for some institutions in some countries, that means that you simply have to sign something before you even have a chat with anybody,
yeah, yeah,
however informal, yeah, that might be.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, and this is kind of the interesting thing we've talked about recently, where COVID reduced, I mean, stopped, and then post-COVID reduced the number of trips. But, you know, for many international partnerships, any potential of success was on the back of multiple visits of trust building and awareness and engagement and commitment, you know, which are at that point still hypothetical, right? It's just, well, no, I need to come once and twice and three and four. And then at that point, my level of commitment is evident, you know, and then the university is now taking me seriously and my institution seriously. And now we can begin the conversations that might lead to something. But if you're not prepared to put that in, or you're not aware, indeed, right, that that's a reality. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's the game is the game, but it's different in, as you'd expect and as you'd hope, in different places. And the more you go, the more you learn, and the more you're able to tweak your approach. And then, you know, and it's like, well, why should I be annoyed about an MOU? I've got a template. It's the work of 30 seconds to type the two university names in. If that's what helps me get to where I need to get to, okay, then yeah, that's kind of that, right? And as you said, it's cost nothing.
It's having that flexibility as well, isn't it, though?
Yeah.
I think sometimes, you know, in our efforts, which is quite right, to be compliant, to make sure that, you know, legally we're covered depending on what we're doing, I think sometimes it can take an inordinate amount of time to do some things, which, as you say, quite frankly, in the whole scheme of things, this actually makes no difference whatsoever. You aren't committing. Look at the wording. You're not committing really anything in there, anybody to anything, you know, other than a willingness to discuss with each other. And of course, then when you get into more detail, if you're looking at the detailed actions, then you have something that is more substantial.
Yeah.
Whatever you might call that, or whatever form of then legal agreement you might go into there. Mm. But I do like this notion of success, though, because, you know, it is different, isn't it? Depending on what your motivations are and what your goals are, and I do like also the notion that failure or not achieving exactly what you set yourself out to achieve in terms of the success doesn't necessarily mean that it was a failure. It just means that, you know, probably things shifted. It just means that, you know, you haven't quite achieved what you wanted to achieve, but you've still got,
yeah,
got some learnings out of it. You know, I mean, I suppose you could even think of it in sporting analogies, can't you? You know, if you've got, let's go to my favourite sport, of course, rugby. And, you know, if you've got the great New Zealand, for example, you know, playing Georgia, well, arguably for Georgia, who are getting very good, it has to be said, they're definitely improving, but they're still not at the level of New Zealand. Of course they are. They live and breathe in New Zealand and have done for a gazillion years, possibly longer. But, you know, their success measure will not be to get more points than New Zealand.
Yeah.
If they did, there'd be a national holiday and everybody would love it. I'm not saying that they wouldn't want, but that isn't, if they'd set them that themselves as their success measure, then they would never even bother playing somebody like New Zealand, because they know that they're going to lose. Now, you can't go into it, no, you're going to lose, even though you know. But what you've got to go into it, haven't you, saying is, right, our tackle count is what we're going to look at. So we don't want missed tackles. We don't want them zipping past us all the time. We, you know, that is what we're looking at in terms of forms of success. Yes, we want to be getting a try. If we get a chance at penalties, kick those penalties, get those conversions. That similarly, the conversation in the New Zealand camp won't be, hey, we want to beat Georgia.
Yeah.
FYI, I just picked these two out, these two teams, both of whom I think are wonderful, just out the air. But their success measure won't be, we want to beat them, because they know they're going to beat them. Their success measure will be, you know, we don't want them to get a try. We don't want them to get a point.
Yeah.
If they've got 5 points in the first half, then our success measure for the second half is they don't get any. So it is there. So you might then look, might you, at the screen, and you look and you think, oh, gosh, I wonder how Georgia did against New Zealand the other day, and you look on there and it says, you know, 7 points or 10 points to 54, and you think, oh dear me, you know, poor old Georgia, without thinking, actually, they got a try, they got it converted, they got a penalty, and goodness me, go and look at their tackling stats. They were amazing, you know, for 10% of the ball, they got that many points. So it does go back, doesn't it, looking at of what just that one, that raw bit of data might say to you, you have failed. Whereas actually, if you really go under the surface of something, there have been successes there as well.
Absolutely. It's funny because the fairly recent press conference a year or two ago in the NBA in America, the National Basketball Association, they're interviewing a player for the Milwaukee Bucks, a Greek player called Giannis Antetokounmpo, very, very long name. And the interviewer says, so, you know, you didn't win the championship this year, so you obviously considered this season a failure. And that the player sort of, you know, shakes his head and he's like, that's the wrong question. Right. You know, he said, so your job, you're a journalist, right? How do you measure your success each year? Right. Why do you work each year? You know, you work to get better. You work to feed your family. You work to, you know, buy a house. You work to look after your parents. You know, you do all these types of things. Right. Why are they not learning? Like this word success, particularly in sports, it's wrong. And he sort of quotes the thing about Michael Jordan, you know, typically held up as one of the greatest players ever, if not the greatest. And he said, so he only won in six of his seasons. So every other year was a failure. You're saying that every other year was a failure and not learning to get to the point where he, you know, it's this concept that succeeding is binary. Like it's you've won or you haven't won. And you think, and you know, your point is absolutely correct. If you're moving towards building partnerships and growing and learning and all the stuff we talked about in previous podcasts, you know, awareness and multiculturalism and understanding and a little bit more empathy and a little bit more connection and a little bit more brand recognition, a little bit more awareness. It's like, well, those have to be measures of success. They are measures of growth, right? They are the purpose of a university to keep those conversations and debates going. And I think it's such an interesting way of, you know, it's not failure. The fact that they didn't win is not failure. You know, as you said, you know, they didn't score a try, or we're better than we were before, or even the fact that we got to play against the best. I mean, that's a huge mark, right? That's, you know, to be in the same room or the same conversation with people. It's like, well, no, that's a big step. So I think it's it comes back to the stuff you were talking about in previous ones about, you know, the culture, you know, the organization and the leadership and how it's framed and then how it's managed and then how it's, you know, measured and that sort of message of what are we trying to do dictates how we measure the thing that we've done and how we you know, yeah, how we understand and how we accept the thing that we've done and what we do with it, I suppose, right? Yeah. Yeah.
So what success is.
So we'll throw out success, we'll throw out measurement, and oh, look at that. The social scientists just want to think about things. Yeah, yeah, fair enough. But so do the multi-million dollar athletes who know what they're talking about. So, yeah. Okay, wonderful. All right, so that's about as not where I thought we would go along the way, but kind of where I expected us to end up. So, yeah, excellent. A successful podcast.
Do not rate us.
No, please do rate us. That'd be fun. Yeah.